Willkommen zu Unruhige Zeiten, dem Podcast vom und für den Mittelstand.
Herzlich willkommen. Hier ist eine neue Folge von Unruhige Zeiten, dem Podcast von TTE Strategy. Ich bin Lars Lindokogel und heute haben wir eine spannende Folge bei Deutz und die nehmen wir auf Englisch auf und da geht's auch jetzt gleich los. We're recording another episode in English here at Deutz and our guest works for the oldest engine manufacturer in the world, headquartered in Germany, but is about to learn German. We will test this a little bit later. And in addition to English, French and Spanish, I mean, that's quite a lot. She works very closely together with the board and top management here at Deutz, and she's the go-to person when it comes to transformation, specifically people and leadership. And therefore, she makes a wonderful fit for us to talk about the transformation at Deutz and what goes well and what does not. Hello, Severine Goddard. It's wonderful having you here on the show at Unruhige Zeiten.
Very pleased to be here. Thank you for having me.
Super. How are you today, Severine?
Yeah, good. Everything's going well.
It's very exciting to be here and thanks for showing me around a little bit already. Very cool to be here at the production in Cologne. Yeah, good to have you. I promise I will let you speak a lot today, but I need to share the following with our listeners. Many may already know this. Nikolaus Otto, before founding the company we now call Deutz, invented the Otto engine, in German the Otto Motor, and the engine was patented in 1877 and was the foundation for modern internal combustion engines. And I'm very honored to speak with someone here at the company where this all comes from, and who currently shapes the transformation at Deutz. Severine, when you hear the phrase unruhige Zeiten, turbulent or busy times in English, what comes to your mind first, personally and professionally?
You know, for me, busy is nice. I like to be busy personally and professionally. I think that means there's opportunities and there's things that can be changed and things that can be done. Turbulent has a bit of a negative connotation for me, but let's go with busy. I like that.
Is it busy at the moment for you personally and here at Deutz?
Sure, definitely busy. There's a lot of things going on. We've kicked off our transformation around 2022. And ever since then, I'd say we've been on quite an exciting journey together. So.
Okay, super. So let's hear about that more in a second.
Die Vita.
You have quite an interesting career path, shifting from education to industry, all under the umbrella of Deutz. You worked for almost 4 years as director of studies at the Deutz Business School in Spain, and now you're responsible for people and leadership engagement in the transformation department here at Deutz in Germany. How did this transition happen?
Yeah. I think it was probably a combination of a little bit of preparation and also somehow being in the right place at the right time and having a little bit of luck, right? Like you said, I'd been at the school for about 4 years and really learned a lot during that time because I had the chance to work with people from the company who were really involved in industry. And this really opened my eyes to a whole new business world that I hadn't learned so much about before during my educational past, right? So I became really interested in this and I started to train in project management, change management, a few different HR topics. And then a position became available in this transformation team and I was excited to apply. I think it was a little bit a change of tone at the time. I was one of the only non-German or definitely the only non-German speaking colleague in the team. So I think that was definitely in itself a bit of a transformation. But no, very, very excited that I managed to make the transition.
Yeah. And can you tell us what skills transferred really well from your previous experience? And were there also personal challenges, so things where you said, okay, now I really have to learn something new?
Sure. Yeah, I think a lot of things transferred well because in the end, both positions, although they're totally different, they're focused on people, right? So all of this active listening, building relationships, creating a trusted environment to receive people's feedback, all of those kind of people-based skills transferred quite well. What did not? I definitely had to build on my ability to cohabit in this corporate ecosystem. That's a little bit different. I think especially the school was much more of a kind of startup mentality, right? Everyone did a bit of everything. And now there's a lot more clearly defined roles and you should know what you should be doing and not step too much on the toes of other people and so on. So this was definitely a bit of a learning experience at the beginning.
And then specifically in the new context with you as a first non-German speaker in the team. Is there any German sentence that you are regularly or maybe most often saying in the context of the transformation here?
A good one. Das kommt mir Spanisch vor. Yeah.
Okay, that is cool.
Just kidding. It's not so crazy. I obviously just wanted to make some jokes about the Spanish, but you have to be a little bit crazy in a transformation, right? I think that's really what it's about. It's about doing something different that hasn't been done before. And in order to be different, you have to think outside the box and challenge yourself really to be crazy on some level. And we have a few different examples of that over the past couple of years.
Yeah, so we'll talk about the secret sauce at Deutz later, but it seems like being a little bit crazy, trying something new so that you are able to say das kommt mir Spanisch vor, seems to be part of the recipe here at Deutz. Okay, wonderful. So great. Thank you very much. And now let's talk about what happens at Deutz right now.
Unruhige Zeiten.
A quick yes or no, Severine, is Deutz currently or in turbulent or busy times?
Jein. So yes and no, right? Definitely busy. There's a lot going on. But I wouldn't say turbulent. For me, that feels like there's no plan and it's a bit chaotic. And for me, it's the opposite of that. We have a very clear plan. We have a clear dual plus strategy that we're following and a clear path ahead. So busy, but not too turbulent.
Okay. The history of Deutz is fascinating, really, and makes me wonder if it serves as an analogy for today's times, maybe. So Nikolaus Otto experimented with the engine, talked about the time of that already, funds were running out, and the inventor was at his wit's end, so to say. Yet one man took an interest in the gas-powered machine and was eventually persuaded. Eugen Langen, an engineer in Cologne's sugar industry, invested in Otto's idea and expertise, and in 1864 they founded a company together. Otto provided the know-how, Langen the capital, and above all the entrepreneurial vision, and together they established what became known as the world's first engine factory. And wherever I look around here, it says the engine company, so it still has that DNA. It's such a fantastic story of entrepreneurship and innovation. And what would you say, could Deutz be at a similar turning point today? Is the company reinventing itself at the moment?
Somehow, yes, but without losing our heritage, right? And I think that's something that also really impressed me when I spent more time here in Cologne, how proud people are to belong to this company and of the heritage that we have in this whole story that you told them. We celebrated last year 160 years of Deutz, which is quite an impressive trajectory, right? So yes, we're building the next Deutz is what we say. And that involves a lot of things from our past and what made us who we are until now. And I think that's also building on some of the other skills that we developed to be better also for the future.
And what does that mean to build the next Deutz? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. So I would say that's really about following through on our Dual Plus strategy.
What is it? What is Dual Plus mean?
Yeah. So Dual Plus is I guess a kind of simple way of explaining a strategy that's really about broadening our base a little bit and getting out into different markets that we weren't in so much in the past. So everybody knows us as the engine company, as you said, but really we want to become more of a solutions provider now. So we've had, of course, the engines business for 160 years. We've also been heavily involved in the service area for quite some time now as well. And recently, in the past 3 years, we've started to sometimes organically and sometimes inorganically grow into new segments like the energy segment or electrification and even defense. So exploring new avenues.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that. So that sounds very exciting. Many people, including the media, speak very positively about your boss, Deutz CEO Sebastian Schulte. Could you say that he is kind of the new Nikolaus Otto?
I think he'd quite like that one, actually. I never met Otto, obviously, right? It was 160 years ago. But if I think what would have been Otto's skills? He must have been, of course, entrepreneurial and innovative, and for sure have a lot of conviction about what he was trying to do. And I think in that sense, we could say Sebastian definitely has some similar qualities. Yeah,
Maybe you can ask him and then we can talk about that, what he will say. So how does Deutz see its identity evolving beyond being known primarily as the engine company? You mentioned already becoming a solutions provider. And what does that mean for the identity and what is behind this?
Sure. I think it's a tricky transition, right? And for some people, it's an opportunity. For other people, change change is difficult. And I think especially when we come here to Cologne, for example, this has really been the heart of the company. And we've somehow been a one product company. A lot of the time we say we're not one product because we have a lot of different types of engines, but realistically it's all a combustion engine. And I think that's a big shift in mindset to be able to accept that there are a lot of other products that we're now working on as well. So I think in that sense, it's quite tricky, but it's an exciting time. And I think the good thing is there's a lot of kind of proof points or evidence as we're going through this transformation that this strategy is really working for us at Deutz. I think if we'd had similar order intake, a while ago in history, I don't think we would be as well positioned as we are now. By broadening our portfolio, we become a lot more resilient and a lot better to face the future together. So
a lot going on at Deutz. Is this the first time there's such a transformation at Deutz?
Yeah, definitely not. With 160 years of history, I think we've had to transform many times, right? It's part of evolution. One example people will probably know quite well, that you can see these green Deutz tractors still even running around. This was all part of Deutz at one point, and then we kind of transformed and separated. So there's lots of different chapters of Deutz history. We've got robots running around behind us, right? I mean, this is undoubtedly not the same kind of production facility that we had in the past. It's a different type of transformation, but there's digital transformation also going on. And I think this is an additional part of our transformation.
And we talked about it a little bit before. German economy overall is currently caught between an industrial downturn, but then there's also quite some rise of the defense sector, and you mentioned in your list what's part of the Dual Plus strategy already. And some companies that previously had very little to do with defense are now seizing this opportunity, and so is Deutz. I think you also acquired a specialist drone drives company and tap into the market for defense. And I think there was one question raised by an employee in the media or in a talk show, are we now becoming a defense company? What would you say to that? Are you becoming a defense company now?
So certainly not, right? As I explained, there's so much more to our portfolio in terms of the products and services that we offer. In the end, defense is somehow, we have a right to play at least, and probably a right to win in that market because of the kind of technology and experience that we have. So it's an interesting opportunity somehow for us right now in the market. And I think it's an opportunity we'd like to try to seize. But no, we're not at all becoming a weapons factory or anything like that. But you know, there's a lot to learn from that. When you get that feedback from the people on the floor, that's a great way for you to be able to tap into what their fears are, because we communicate a lot, right? And for us, it's really important to take all of our people along on our journey. And it's not only about having a strategy in a white tower somewhere sitting in this corporate universe, but it's really about every person being able to not just understand the strategy, but understand also how they contribute to it. And so if there's voices coming that are saying to me, hey, you know, we think we're becoming a weapons factory, something's gone a bit wrong there. And I know I need to, you know, thinking about people and leadership engagement, I know I need to take some action there.
Yeah. So not pointing the finger now at the weapons factory or defense specifically, but how is the mood overall in the workforce? Are people embracing the strategy? How would you describe it at the moment?
You know, there's always a bit of everything, right? And I think that's also something that's a bit hard to sit with sometimes, is to know that you can't convince or persuade or get everybody on board all the time. Of course, that's the ideal scenario, and that will always be our aim, is to take all of our employees with us on this journey. But somehow, there will be some that don't quite make it. I think the good thing is, like I said before, there's really proof and evidence that we're working in the right direction. And although that might be tricky for you personally in the short term, because you have to do your job in a different way or adjust as part of this journey, in the end, I think people can see that there's a greater good there for the company. And like I said before, people are really passionate about working for Deutz. So.
And what is the proof and evidence? Can you share that with us?
Sure. I mean, we've had pretty successful results, right? In terms of, like I mentioned before, we're much more resilient financially. And I think compared to a lot of similar companies out there, we've done pretty well recently, given the economic situations that are occurring. So I think it's good for our people to also see, hey, you know, where other companies are having mass layoffs and all these kind of different programs going on, Deutz hasn't had to go to those kind of extremes. So.
Okay. So we talked about defense. You already went into offense mode. So let's move into the next chapter.
The secret sauce.
So Severin, at the moment, what's the biggest challenge for you here at DEUTZ? Is it executing the Dual Plus strategy?
That's a good question, because it is tough to reach our ambition, right? I mean, we want to double our revenue by 2030. We want to reach 4 billion. So for sure, that's a challenge. I think there's opportunities to be seized, but I know there's a lot of people trying to figure out exactly what that path looks like and adjust the path. But from my personal perspective, I'd say it's more about the mindset. And that's not something specific to DEUTZ. I think that's something that probably a lot of people listening to this podcast would identify with. Mindset and culture really is a key success factor. And until you have the right culture in which people are really just comfortable adjusting to change and being more open to work in different ways, until that really becomes a part of your DNA, that's really a struggle. And I think we made a lot of progress. I think somehow we have this innovative spirit in our DNA from Otto, but for sure, it's something we can't rest on our laurels about, right? And we have to keep pushing there.
Yeah. And you've said that the secret sauce is when people understand what we are doing, why we are doing it, and how they can contribute. And what is the hardest part to achieve in such a strategy transformation program? The what, the why, or the how?
So the why, it's tricky, because why for me personally is always a difficult one to manage. But I think people live in the world, you know, they see the news, they're kind of aware of what's going on in the world. And that makes the why somehow a little bit easier to explain, at least. The what, I mean, sometimes it changes for people, but really the what's quite evident. It's the how they contribute. Great story that our CEO, Sebastian, always tells is this one about JFK going to NASA and talking to the cleaner, the janitor, right, cleaning the floor. And JFK says to the janitor, "What are you doing?" And the cleaner says, "Helping to put a man on the moon." And that's something that we really talk about quite often when we think about how we would like our employees to feel engaged with our strategy as well. It's having that shared mission and really feeling like whatever it is that you do, it's all an essential part of this puzzle that helps us to keep building as a company and reach our goals.
Yeah. So. And do you think if I went out now to the production floor here directly behind us, could I ask the guys how they can contribute?
I think we should. Let's do it. When we're finished, we should go out there.
We'll have a walk and speak to a couple of people.
I think you'd be surprised.
Okay, Wonderful. We'll do that. You emphasized communication, that you can never over-communicate a strategy. Can you give an example where over-communication actually changed the outcome or really moves the needle?
Yeah, you know, I think when you often think when you communicate something once and you do it really clearly, then people must have understood, and that's perfect, and it's done, right? And I think for us, we took rather the approach of we want to communicate about the strategy to people through a series of different media, and also thinking about informing people, but also engaging them. And that's two quite different things, right? So of course, we have town halls, and we have meetings and quarterly meetings on the shop floor where we talk to people about the strategy. But actually, one of the maybe most powerful things we did right at the beginning was we made a children's storybook about the strategy. And it was all about Otto, actually. Otto's a little animal. And it really talks about what is the Dual Plus strategy? Why are we transforming? Then we had our leaders make a video with little Lego figures. And so they were telling the story of the strategy using these little Lego figures to explain to people. So then people get this input and a similar message from a lot of different directions and media. And I think that's when they start to connect the dots and they can really, things really become interiorized. And
Yeah, I think what's typically a challenge is that leaders, the communicators, the senders, so to say, think they have communicated quite a bit. For them, it's all clear. But then for the recipients, the people in the organization, for them, it hasn't landed yet, maybe. Yeah? Have you experienced situations like this? And how could leaders detect that actually it's not enough yet?
I mean, like we said before, I think it's never enough, right? And you have to keep it fresh somehow. We're always inventing new formats, whether it's videos or stories or and really to answer your question, how do you know when it didn't work? When no one has a single question. That's when you know that they actually haven't understood, which is kind of counterintuitive, right? Because you think, well, if there's no questions, I did a really amazing job explaining what I wanted to say. But actually, I would argue when there's no questions, people either don't have the trust built up to be able to ask the questions, or it's somehow flown a little bit over their heads. And I think when we really challenged the status quo, we, at the beginning, we had to create the safe environment, right? So we would make like QR codes that people could scan standing on the shop floor and anonymously submit their questions. And then it's not so much like I'm asking a stupid question, but, you know, somebody in the room asked this question. And when people really have follow-up questions, that's when you know they're engaging with the topic and not just passively half listening.
And what would you say when other companies are listening in now, maybe putting up these QR codes, what's a good indicator that people are engaging? Is it one question a week? Is it 20 questions a week? Or what would you say?
It depends on the format you set up, right? For us, that was like a live question round. So Sebastian had come down to production. He was speaking to people. I mean, what's the typical thing? You bring the CEO and you ask him to speak for an hour, right? And actually, we wanted to do the opposite. We said, Sebastian, let's keep it really simple, 5 to 10 minutes. I mean, I didn't time him, but it was kind of short and sweet with the main points. And all of the rest of the time that he was here, the idea was to get questions from people, but we did it in different ways. So they could submit questions before, and then he answered them. They also could submit questions live. And then we broke up the group and everyone was having coffee and they could really ask kind of more one-on-one questions. And this way we created the right environment. I think it's difficult to measure how many questions are the right thing, right? And I think it depends on the kind of country you're in as well, because in Germany, people have totally different experiences. For example, when I've been to Spain or to Asia, it's a totally different culture and that has a huge impact. So you have to bear that in mind. But smart questions. People really have smart questions. Some of them are the ones you know they're going to ask, right? What, I don't know, what happens to my job? Of course, they're worried about what does this mean for me? But there are also some really smart questions that come out sometimes.
Yeah, but I think it's a great indicator to say if there are good questions coming up, it shows that there is interaction, people care about it. If there's no question, that could be a warning signal. Yeah. So you talked about that you basically organized this questioning session here with your CEO on the shop floor. The transformation team overall, are you guys coaching your C-level? Are you coaching the CEO also upward a little bit?
That would be a bold claim, right? I'm coaching the CEO. No, I don't think so at all. I don't think so. But I think it's a nice show of culture that he, of course, makes a lot of suggestions and we also make suggestions as well. And it's a kind of co-constructed idea sometimes, these sort of formats. You know, we can make a suggestion or we can make a few different proposals. And I think that says a lot about the culture of a place when you have that trusted feedback culture as well. You know, sometimes I call him after an event and he'll say, hey, you know, that didn't really work for me today. And so we can work out how to do it better next time. And I think that's really the tone that Sebastian wanted to set as soon as he came in. A CEO, he changed it. Here we used to have this Z culture, right? So everyone would speak to each other using Z in German. And he changed it to do. It was one of the first things he did in his mandate. And I think for a traditional German company, that was a pretty bold statement somehow, right? But I think that somehow set the tone. For me, the CEO's job, amongst many other things, is really to set the tone for the transformation. And I think that was a really strong, powerful signal to send.
It's like a couple of years ago when CEO started taking the ties off, for example. Yeah, same thing happened. Okay, let's move to the next section.
Der menschliche Moment.
Deutz has a legacy. We talked about it during the beginning, a legacy of entrepreneurship and innovation. And you've mentioned that the middle management is the toughest communication layer. Why do messages get lost in translation there, and how can one fix it?
They have a pretty tough job, you know, those guys in the middle, right? Because they've got pressure coming down, they've got pressure coming up, and they've got to somehow balance their role as being a leader and also being involved in the daily operations, right? I mean, the middle management are not running around just leading the team. They're really involved in daily decisions. And so I think that's where, for them, it's such a huge challenge to be able to make the time. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's not a priority, but there's always things that come up. I'm sure it happens to you. It definitely happens to me. Sometimes I have a plan and something comes up during the day. So it's difficult to set aside the time and dedicatedly really communicate to people. I think that's why.
Okay. And if you have the luxury of having a transformation team, how can a transformation team help the middle management basically drive the transformation from within better?
Yeah, I think there's things you can do in a more short-term way, and then there's, of course, your more long-term goals. short term, we provide a lot of material, right? So when we want people to communicate about things, we usually kick off with a senior leadership meeting, or even this year we had a leadership conference, which was really exciting because we got 125 leaders together from across the globe. And that's where we really kicked off this idea of building the next DOITS. And all of the kind of presentation materials and marketing and everything that we were using that day, we shared with them. And that meant they didn't have to go away and reinvent everything from scratch. Of course, they have to personalize the messages and make sure it fits for their team, but they're at least not starting on the blank page, which is always the hardest starting point, right? And other than creating the cascade ourselves, long-term, we also have a plan, right? We have leadership journeys. So this is really an intense training program for our middle management that we're kicking off with next year. And one of the main focuses is how to communicate with your team and how to transmit strategic vision and mission and so on. So I think you have to work a little bit on those two planes. You need to give them something short-term that makes them feel supported and then provide them with a more long-term skill plan as well.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Couple of questions, quick answers, please, Severin. Do you have a magic wand for cultural change? What would you fix instantly?
I don't think you can fix change quickly, though. That's the problem. I think change is a process that you need, but I would wish with my magic wand to have the tenacity to see through all the different phases.
Okay. One recurring task in your job that you would get rid of immediately if you could?
Documentation. You know, like I was saying before about all this corporate world, right? You have your presentations and your Word documents and all of these things. If I could have an AI tool that would just get all of that done for me, and then I could really focus on engaging with the people, listening to them more, being more creative and reinventing things, then that would be great.
Yeah. One leader you admire, but not here at DOITS?
I saw a great interview the other day with this lady. She's the ex-CEO of Pepsi. Indra Nooyi, I think. And she seems great, but really humanistic leader. I really focus also on kind of long-term sustainability of the company. So,
okay, wonderful. You come from a learning background. What skill would you like to acquire that you don't possess yet?
Obviously German skills, right?
German.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Great humor. That's good English humor for sure. Yeah.
I would have the superpower to go back to the past and be able to read the minds of some of the leaders from the past, because I think we can really learn a lot from speaking to people that have been through things before and take some lessons away from that.
Okay. Currywurst in the canteen or chic sushi? What's your preference?
I don't like currywurst. I know that's a terrible thing to say, but you know, for my job, it's essential to do a bit of both. So I would just get on with hopefully I could get a salad or something, right? But I think for me, I need to be close to the C-suite and the top management and understand what their struggles are. I have to support them. And they're the ones that, like we said before, they set the tone and they continue the communication. But if I'm not having my pulse on the ground and speaking to the people that are really working at the company, then I'm just in an ivory tower. I'm
so
not going to help.
So you're
anyone.
Navigating your lunches.
I've got to be everywhere. Yeah. Oh, my agenda is quite the thing. So
okay. So common sense, transformation is easy on paper, but hard to put into practice. Let's talk about that.
Butter by die Fische.
Turning strategy into action. What's the single biggest bottleneck for the transformation here at DOITS?
More than bottleneck, I'd say the challenge is You've got to try and find a balance between new impulses, keeping things fresh, surprising people a little bit somehow and taking them out of their comfort zone, but also not so far out of the comfort zone that then they're not kind of, they're not comfortable, they can't work. It's this balance between the new impulse and leaving some time for things to settle in and for people to absorb things. Otherwise, you leave them behind, right? And that's really something we talk about all the time. There's obviously so many ideas flying around, not only from my side, but from everyone. And at some point we have to also think, okay, is this the right time for this idea? Can this wait a little bit? Is this a priority right now? And balance the new with the period of adaptation that people need.
Yeah. So for how long is the transformation been ongoing already? And could you describe maybe the phase a little bit that you are in right now?
Yeah, so we kicked off around 2022. And we had our first horizon of our strategy. And I think during that time, we called it broadening the base. So it was about getting involved in a lot of different markets. And I think there was a lot of work to be done there also with the mindset. And that's where we brought in these values somehow that we call the 5 T's. And at that time, there was so much excitement about the 5 T's, right? There was a lot of enthusiasm.
What are they, the 5 T's?
Good question. So it's truth, trust, transparency, tenacity, and team. So all of them begin with T in English, which makes it kind of easier. And people were really enthusiastic about it at the beginning. I think people felt the need to somehow reset the culture. Like we said before, let's not forget who we are, but let's give ourselves a new impulse here. And of course, the excitement eventually, it's not always easy to live up to these five T's as well, right? I mean, there's this nice part of holding each other accountable. And then there's also the struggle of, I don't know, if people often say, this is really intransparent. Okay, we have to define a little bit. We can't tell everyone everything all the time. That's not, aside from anything else, it's not pragmatic, right?
Yeah, I think that's a typical problem. If you're now in this program for, let's say, 2.5-3 years or so, at some point you have your five T's, for example, and at some point people realize, okay, not everything moves as fast as we would have wished for. How do you re-energize that, or how do you make sure it's not going to back to where you started?
I think it's very difficult to go right back to the start, because you fundamentally change parts of the company DNA when you have such huge movements like this 5T movement. In the end, I don't think anyone went really back to the starting point. But like you said, it's definitely not a clear, straight up trajectory. There's definitely some highs and some lows. And I think that's where it's important to really integrate any of these changes in your processes in the company. So we always said with the five T's, it can't just be a poster on the wall. I mean, the poster on the wall is an important reminder, but it really needs to be integrated within our daily business, within our performance management, or our 360-degree feedback, or we made the 5T awards. I mean, I could never have imagined how excited people were to be nominated for a 5T award. I mean, when I kicked off the project, I was hopeful, right? I was very enthusiastic about it, but you never really know the feeling it's going to have. And in the end, people were really on board with that. And every year we get like 70 nominations for different teams. So we could be talking about 700 people across the company globally being nominated for these awards. And when you really embed it in part of your processes and your daily routines, that's when I think things have the power to really make a change. If it is just a poster on the wall, then...
Yeah. And could you give an example of what are people winning the 5T award for?
Sure. So it's quite a tricky process, actually. We had to make the judges like an anonymous board of experts, because there were so many applications that came in. Some of them are for really working, let's say, across silos, right? I think that's really something that we wanted to work on. Our heart is sitting in Cologne, but we're a global company and we wanted to become so much more global. So working across countries, across silos, across different functions, collaboration in that sense, that's often what people talk about with team or with transparency and truth. It's often about creating better systems to give more data availability and things like that. So different projects.
Okay, so these were the five T's. If I noted that correctly, trust, truth, tenacity, team, and transparency. How do you roll something like this out across an organization?
Yeah, the culture is not top down, right? You can't just say, hey, now everyone, we're going to work with these five T's and think that that's going to work. It has to be much more organic than that. So although the T's themselves were defined by the team, we then went on literal hikes with a lot of the leadership team. We took them around different areas of the German countryside, actually even internationally. I know some of the colleagues from the USA were also involved, and they were talking about what each of these words really means to them in their work. Because like you said, we're a global company. So what tenacity means in Germany, I mean, it doesn't even translate well into some languages, actually. So there's a lot of discussion to be had there. And then once we created this kind of standard definition, we said, okay, how do we take this to the people? So of course, there's posters and there's videos and there's all of these things that people would usually think of. But then we really took the time to have workshops, and we literally went onto the production floor. We gave the guys a whole load of photographs and we said, okay, so pick the pictures that represent this T for you, and then try to describe why you chose the picture. And it really created this shared sense of identity and personalization, right? Because otherwise values are such this corporate world of typical phrases that you hear so often, but that really made it more personal to the teams that were working with them and made such a stronger connection with the five T's.
So what's your personal favorite? Which T do you embrace most?
You know, it changes all the time. I used to say it was trust, because I think you can't really have any of the others without trust. What's a team without trust? But I have to say this year, I'm feeling a lot more like it's tenacity. The others are hugely important, but if you haven't got tenacity, you won't ride out a transformation. So
that's very positive. In all change, there's always things that don't work so well, that there may be resistance from people as well when things are different than they have been in the past. How do you deal with that? How do you overcome this resistance, and how do you take very critical people along as well?
For me, this is a really tough one because, like I said, I don't want to leave anybody behind. But I think there also came a time when I accepted that you can't have 100% of people on board and that maybe I have to be happy with a 98. You know, there will always be people that probably for very personal reasons, it's really hard to get them on board. But I think you kick off with your information round, and then it's really important to get feedback. And I think that's sometimes the thing that's more complicated to organize or that people forget about, right? Typical, yeah, no, I communicated, I told people about this, and that's it. No, you really have to give them also the space and the time to tell you how they feel about it, because actually you can learn a lot from that as well. Maybe not so much about adjusting your strategy directly, but maybe about your rollout plan. You can get some interesting feedback and make sure that by communicating or by acting in a way that's more aligned with the way that people are receiving the information, it's more likely to be better interpreted and better accepted by them. So.
And we are in Cologne here today, but you mentioned a couple of times we are a global company. So there's a lot of cross-cultural challenges. I assume you have lived in Spain, you are from the UK, now we are here in Germany, but Deutsch is beyond those three countries. Is there a secret tip or a secret sauce how to take people along when it comes to this cross-cultural challenge? Is that very individually, or do you have a one-size-fits-all approach? How do you do that?
You definitely can't do a one-size-fits-all, right? But I think, like I said before, the mindset is key. When you see differences not as something to be overcome, but something to be valued and celebrated, that's just a completely different starting point, right? And I think even within these three European countries that you just mentioned, there's differences. But of course, when we go further afield, there's many, many more. And I think when you kick off this idea of all of our differences make us who we are, it makes us part of our DNA, and it makes us actually stronger. The more diverse we are, the more different opinions we get in, the more problem it's proven that you can solve problems better, right? So I think working from that stance point of celebrating the differences and not trying to make everybody German somehow, I think that's definitely a mindset shift. But I think that's probably the secret sauce.
Yeah, and I think many of these bigger hidden champions in Germany have a global footprint. Is there any recommendation that you can give to others? How do you keep the ear with the subsidiaries or companies' footprint abroad, and how do you take in their perspective as well? Can you share anything very practical how to do that maybe?
I mean, the way we've done it is really investing the time and the energy to go and speak to the people. And I don't think there's a shortcut. At least I don't believe that there's a shortcut there. And I think it's a hugely energizing experience when you get to go and you hear these different perspectives and you get the different outlooks on things. We had a great trip to Madrid a couple of weeks ago. I went with Sebastian and Katerina, and for us, yeah, of course, we were talking a lot to the people and getting the feedback from them was great, but also feeling the different energy and noticing the different organizational cultures within each of these different countries is really enriching as well.
Yeah, so no shortcuts for taking people along. So yeah,
you just got to go there and put in the legwork. But on the flip side, like I said, you get a lot of energy back from that, right?
Yeah. And I really like this idea of when you engage with the people, are they asking good questions? Yeah, or questions at all. It's a good indicator to see whether there's engagement and people ask to say behind the strategy, or at least thinking about it. So it was very interesting speaking with you today, Severin. Thank you so much for having me here. We could learn a lot about how to lead a transformation, how to take people along, and specifically also how to deal with communication. And I hope we'll stay in touch. Any final words, how to make the strategy successful in the future? What does it take to also deliver a strategy at the end? Is it a forever process? What's your view on that?
I think it's a forever process, and I think we need to remember it's not top down. And then we can have an idea, and we should, of course, right? We should have an idea and we should have an intention, but you can't impose things like strategy and culture. You really have to get the people involved and get them engaging with the topic.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we will be able to follow the Deutsch strategy. There's quite a lot of media coverage. So thank you for your time today. And to our listeners, thank you for listening in today. It was a pleasure being here at Deutsch. If you liked the episode, let us know if you have any recommendations for future episodes as well. Thank you very much and bye-bye.
Unruhige Zeiten.